listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So, as we just heard from Chris Holsky, according to a new survey, 40% of Canadians, they don't really care if other countries get the vaccine first. Now, I assume many of those are people who don't want the vaccine anyway, because there's about 30 or 40% of Canadians who say they won't take the vaccine. So some of that is in there, and the Liberals can't take too much comfort in it. But I would suggest that if you really don't care that other people get the vaccine ahead of us, you just don't care about human life. Seriously. We're talking about 40 people every day in this country dying because of COVID-19. That's one or two an hour. So every day that passes where other countries are getting the vaccine ahead of us is another couple of people an hour. And that's assuming the death rate doesn't get worse. You know, we're not even in winter yet. And we know this virus, if it's like every other coronavirus on Earth, is going to be seasonal. And it came to Canada in March at the end of winter, and it got pretty bad for a while. Then summer came. But this time, we're going through an entire winter with the virus. In Calgary right now, hospitals are being told to ration oxygen use. You think more people will survive COVID-19 when they're starting to worry about oxygen supplies? I don't think so. So what's the acceptable death rate while we wait for a vaccine and other people get vaccinated? 40 a day? We seem like 40% of Canadians are okay with 40 people a day. 80 people? We good with that? 100 people? 200 people a day? I mean, what's the right number here? I'm stunned that people are so callous about this, that they're so naive about this. Maybe they're just resigned to a certain level of incompetence. But all we're asking here, thanks for your fiscal update, but I don't give a damn. I don't really care. I only care about one thing. What's the vaccine plan? And is there money for rapid testing in the meantime? Surely if you couldn't secure a vaccine in a timely manner, you could give us rapid testing, which has been approved in a lot of other countries. Why can't we have that? So we can at least have some sort of a normal life while we're waiting for everybody else to get vaccinated. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't care what 40% of Canadians say right now. That number is going to change when we start to see needles going into arms in other countries. It just is. And it looks like we may be a couple of months behind. That's a long time. It's a long time because a lot of people will die in the meantime, and a lot of businesses will go bankrupt, and a lot more jobs will be lost, and the economy will be in a deeper hole. Those other countries are going to get out of the hole faster than we are. It sounds crass to even think about the economy when you're talking about human lives, but we have to. The premier here in Ontario, he wants at least, give me a date, a hard date on when the province will get its share of these COVID-19 vaccines.
I have to get answers. I have to get answers. I've been asking the federal government. We need to know when we're getting it, you know, how much we're getting, and what we're getting. There's different vaccines out there. So to be perfectly frank, I'm not any more comfortable than I was last week.
Yeah, how are we, as a province, supposed to come up with a plan? And people are, it's funny how angry people are that the premier doesn't have a plan to roll out vaccines. Well, he needs information from the federal government first, and you don't care about that? Makes no sense. He said he's watching the vaccine updates in other countries, getting very nervous.
We hear stories from around the world. You know, I've read a story that UK might be starting their vaccines on December the 7th. Well, we need answers, and we've worked very collaboratively with the federal government. But, you know, we need the answers.
Yeah, he's been criticized by some conservatives for being too friendly with the federal Liberal government. I don't think that's going to be a criticism you'll have to worry about for much longer, the way he's sounding there. He's getting frustrated. Look, I read some quotes from a vaccine expert. This is not just some radio host talking off the top of his head, but here's what he said. There's no way this federal government signed deals and spent money with these vaccine companies without knowing the plan, right? When do we get it? How many vaccines do you sell? I understand they're going to sell it in their own country first. I understand that. I can even be forgiving of that. But what's the plan? What did you agree to? Because if you signed a blank check, I'm going to be pissed off. We all should be. What did we agree to here? Surely it's in writing that 60% of the doses will go to our home country first. And then since I'm making stuff up here to make my point, but let's say Australia was first in line to buy it after our own country. Then they'll go to Australia. They'll get 20%. And then another 10% will go to the UK. And then Canada will be fourth. If that's the deal, let's know so we can plan for it. We have to build our lives around this schedule. And we're talking about literally survival here. Survival of human beings, survival of the economy, survival of our mental health. Tell us what you signed. Is it so? Did you sign such bad deals? You would rather put up with this criticism and save yourself the embarrassment because the deals are so bad? It makes no sense that they don't know. They must know. So why don't they want to tell us? It can only be that it's really bad news. There was some better news about the Moderna vaccine, which applied yesterday for the regulation agencies in the United Kingdom and the U.S. to look at their vaccine data. And we wondered why they didn't apply in Canada. What we did know yesterday was that Canada has already had the research as it's been coming in. They've been getting it in kind of a rolling way. But I wondered yesterday, but why haven't they asked for final approval? Apparently, that's not the way our system works in Canada. They don't need to ask for it. They just keep sending the data. Once we get the final data, then our government can make a decision, which is fair enough. But where's the Prime Minister yesterday telling us, did we get the final data yesterday as handed to the other countries? Again, is that asking too much? Somebody must know the answer to that question. Man, oh man. Moderna's chief medical officer, Tal Zaks, doesn't believe that this country is behind in the race, at least not with their vaccine.
I don't think Canada has been at the back of the line at all. First amounts to roll off the assembly line, so to speak, will happen towards the very end of this year, beginning of next year. Significant quantities, that's first quarter of next year.
Again, though, he says we're not at the back of the line, but how close are we to the front of the line? It's not really an answer, is it? You're not at the back of the line. Okay, are we second? Are we third? Are we fourth? You talk about the first quarter of next year, but wouldn't it be nice to know who gets vaccinated first so that we know when we're going to get vaccinated? I know we can't predict the start date, but if we knew, hey, once they've vaccinated 10 million people in the U.S., then we'll get vaccinated. And we can watch the vaccination process in the U.S. say, oh, they're at 5. It took a week, so a week away. Give us something here. Moderna says the latest test suggests their vaccine is more than 94% effective. I'll tell you, it's 0% effective if we can't get it. So, as I mentioned, they've asked American and European regulators to allow emergency use of the drug. And Zach says the study results mean a lot to him.
When I saw the final results last night, they came in a little bit earlier than we had planned for. I allowed myself to cry for the first time.
Yeah, we know that they had a bunch of positive tests in their test group, but all of them were people who got the placebo. And one of them actually died.
Wow.
So Zach said he knew then that the vaccine is very effective and actually literally saved lives.
The vaccine is expected to be highly effective at preventing symptomatic disease and very effective at preventing severe outcomes from the disease.
And one day it could be ours. We just don't know when. 6:15, the morning rush.
You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Guess we should talk quickly about the federal liberals. What are we calling them now? Spending updates, fiscal. Economic statements, fiscal updates.
Yeah.
What about budgets? We haven't had one of those since March last year. It's almost 2 years since we had a federal budget.
Not good.
Give us a budget. I don't know. You don't have time. If you could do this statement, you could put together an actual budget. There's some talk that the government could fall over this fiscal update because nobody likes it. But you know Jagmeet Singh is not going to do that. His party has no money. They stand for nothing anyway. They have no principles anymore. He'll just suck up to them and keep them in power. And I'll tell you, I think the prime minister would love an election right now because the polling shows he'd probably win. He better get it in fast, though, before other countries start to get vaccines and we're sitting on the sidelines because the deals he cut didn't get his vaccines fast enough. But we'll see. Anyway, Chrystia Freeland talked about $25 billion in new spending to help Canadian businesses and workers make it through the winter, which is going to be longer because we're not going to have the vaccine right away. Here's Chrystia Freeland.
We will do whatever it takes to help Canadians stay healthy, safe, and solvent. We will invest in every necessary public health measure, and we will support Canadian families and Canadian businesses in a deliberate, prudent, and effective way.
They say they'll spend up to $100 billion to rebuild the economy, but she says it's affordable thanks to low interest rates.
It's important for Canadians to appreciate that the interest charges on our debt that we are paying right now are the lowest in a century.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people use that as an excuse to buy too much house that they couldn't afford when interest rates went up again. Suddenly they couldn't make the monthly payments. It's interesting that's the new measure of affordability, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm not totally blaming the government for spending a lot of money right now. It's a very unusual situation. I understand. We got to spend money to help people right away. I don't really have an issue with that. But what happened to our deficit is very small as a percentage of the gross domestic product. You know why they're not bringing that up anymore? Because it's gotten so high, it's close to record levels. So they don't want to. Well, we need a new measure now. Interest rates are low. Yeah, but interest rates can change. Mm-hmm. Conservative finance critic Pierre Poilievre accused the Liberals of leading the country into some very dangerous territory.
We are not at the cliff or even on the edge of the cliff, but we can now see the cliff, and this government is running towards it as quickly as humanly possible.
And then the leader of the Conservative Party, Aaron O'Toole, mentioned the vaccine issue I've been ranting about this morning.
While Americans are talking about mass vaccination throughout all of January, our government is only speculating about getting part of our population vaccinated by September. That means 10 extra months, Mr. Speaker, of health risks for Canadians, business closures, and economic uncertainty.
I'd put it more bluntly. It means 10 more months of deaths, potentially.
Yeah, that's true.
40 people a day dying right now. And all the experts, including this federal government, tells us that number is only going to get worse. As the number of cases goes up, the number of people dying tends to trail the number of cases. So I guess we're staying home all winter because the hospitals are starting to fill up. So happy in Ottawa that we're still doing well. We haven't succumbed to the temptation to go out and start to cheat a little bit again because the numbers have been low for a couple of weeks. What was it, 29 new cases yesterday? So I know back in the summer, 29 would have seemed like a lot. But when you look at Toronto, you know, they're hitting 400, 500, 600 new cases a day. And we used to be per capita higher than them. Even a per capita basis, what, they're about three times the population.
Yeah.
So we're way lower than they are right now. And I'm happy about that. We're all going to have to be on our best behavior while we wait out this vaccine thing. 6:29, the Morning Rush.
Now back to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So we had a kind of a higher number than we've seen in the last couple of weeks here in Ottawa. I'm talking about daily cases of COVID-19. And I think the wastewater numbers are as important, if not more important. So we want an update on that. And Tyson Graber is the co-lead investigator of our amazing wastewater monitoring project here in Ottawa. And he's on the line live now. Good morning, Tyson.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How closely has the wastewater number followed the actual case numbers that are reported? I know that you can't equate them directly and predict the number of cases, but have you seen that they tend to follow each other pretty well?
Yeah, the general trends we're looking at, the seven-day trends, follow very closely. So there is some blips and peaks here and there with the wastewater data that we don't see with the case data, but very, very generally they follow the caseload.
And do they tend to fall, to trail it or lead it?
That's the question. So we really saw in the early summer when we had a very small resurgence here in Ottawa that the wastewater actually leaded the clinical case data by about 2 days. The fall resurgence that we had, it seemed to be kind of inconclusive in that some days was leading, some days was trailing. And so we really don't know what's going on yet. It's still very much an applied research project.
Let me try a theory.
Yeah.
That in the fall, with people going back to school, I personally ran into a lot of people who weren't symptomatic, but they decided just to get tested anyway because the kids were going back to school. And remember, the number of tests suddenly exploded. Could it be that the earlier results, people waited till they were symptomatic before they got tested, and this one we were finding more asymptomatic cases in the fall? That's why the curve didn't...
We really don't know. We don't have any evidence to back this up. I can count myself as one of those people in that testing line in the fall, early fall. Yeah. And there were, colds going around and non-COVID related symptoms, perhaps. So all these things factor in, and we just don't know yet. And it's not, wastewater is not a clear cut and dry leading indicator yet. But it is certainly when we take into account all of these metrics, so the hospitalizations, so the clinical testing and the wastewater data, all of those together give us a really, really good picture, or what we think is a really good picture of what's happening in the community in terms of how this virus is being transmitted and how prevalent it is in the community.
And those wastewater numbers don't change based on how many people showed up and got tested or how long that, what the testing delays are or any of those things. It's in the water or it's not, right?
That's right. That's one of the big advantages of this, is that it's independent of how many people go get tested, whether you're symptomatic or not. So this is a really powerful point to this test, and that's why it's being used by Ottawa Public Health now, and then hopefully it's being scaled up across the province and across the country.
We talked about this before, but the numbers on your website tend to be trailing the day by a couple of days, so it's hard to know for sure. But I looked on the weekend, and I thought I saw the beginning of an uptick in your numbers. What are you actually seeing?
Yeah, so that's the seven-day trend that you're seeing, that uptick, and that was from really the beginning of last week, kind of the trailing end of the previous week and then the beginning of last week. I can say over the last 3 days, and this will be pushed to the site again later today, the last 3 days is really stable, and it's quite low. We're really at where we were at maybe at the beginning of September now. So this is really good. So if we can keep this trend going for the next few weeks, this will be great. And the percent positivity of the testing is actually quite low now too. It's below 2%, sitting at maybe 1.5 or so. So all of this is kind of steady as she goes. You know, really, if we can maintain this, this is great.
So that higher COVID case number yesterday, based on what you're seeing from wastewater, you would not be, and I know you can't tell us 100%, but you wouldn't be prone to panic over that bigger number yesterday.
No, it's just a one-day thing. And we actually saw, we see this pattern in the wastewater over the last couple of months during this resurgence, this blip that happens once every few days. We see a huge increase in signal, and then it drops back down. So whether or not this was actually a leading indicator of what the cases would be, you know, yesterday, or I guess the reporting would be on Saturday, is an open question. We don't know.
One day blip, that's weird. Does that follow a weekend or something?
The blip actually happened, I believe it was on, I don't know, I could be wrong on this, Monday or Tuesday last week. I have to double check. The case data, again, it's hard to follow on these daily increases and decreases because the testing is so erratic. So one day you might have, 2,000 tests being done, and another day you might have only 500 tests being done. And so, and as you
right, say, but that could be people's behavior as to when they decide to get tested, right? They're busy on the weekend.
That's right. So,
but does wastewater really show those same blips?
So we are, yeah, that's the thing we haven't answered yet, is what these occasional blips are. So we see these big increases, you know, 3, 4, 5 times increases in one day, and then it goes away the next. So physiologically speaking, it doesn't make sense. So something is going on, whether it's something with the it's systematic with the sewers, or this is really real in terms of, you know, people becoming symptomatic and then all of a sudden it goes away, which is very unlikely. But this is one question that we have, which we haven't really answered yet, which we've seen during this resurgence. It's just essentially noise in the data, and what that noise is, it's clearly real to us, but we just haven't been able to determine what that signal is yet.
Well, I bet I'm fascinated by it, and so you must be doubly so, and you probably can't wait to get, maybe, you know, is it human behavior? Do we get together more on weekends, and so there's a more spread, and then it ticks up?
That's right.
Very interesting. When you get that answer, I hope you'll tell us about it. But in the meantime, we'd like to call you back on a fairly regular basis, because it's interesting to hear how those wastewater numbers match up with what else we're seeing. Thank you.
Yep, anytime. Thank you.
Okay, Dyson Graber. He said anytime, Dave. Write that down. So that's good news. The wastewater numbers show a nice, steady, low number in Ottawa. Keep it up, people. Just keep doing what we're doing, which is nothing. We're really becoming good at doing nothing.
Now back to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
706, good to live in Ottawa right now, huh? COVID cases flat for a couple of weeks now. Not just the number of daily cases, because that can go up and down depending on how much testing we're doing. There's no doubt that that's not the most accurate way. But our wastewater testing backs up what we're seeing in the daily cases as well. That is that the numbers flattened out. We're doing well. Here's the bad news, though. I heard it once yesterday during the show from Leslie Roberts, who talked to some people. Then I independently confirmed it after the show yesterday. It's true, anecdotally, we don't have stats on it, but people in the hospitality business here in Ottawa say they are already seeing and getting even more bookings from people from Toronto.
Wow.
And from Montreal, but a lot from Toronto, coming here, spending a couple of nights, going to restaurants, doing some Christmas shopping. And the bookings for Christmas and New Year's are already going up. That's news that cuts two ways, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
good news
not
for the economy.
Good.
We don't want you here.
Yeah. Don't ruin this. We've been working hard.
Remember, they wouldn't even let me in to see my dying mother because I was from a hot spot. Now people are coming up from their hot spot. They want to come to our cold spot. I am not okay with this. I hope the premier speaks out very clearly about this and tells people, don't travel out of your hotspot. That's how you make the other place a hotspot. So I'm not really good with that. There is some better news, though, worldwide, which I've started to see because I follow, I know I'm obsessed, but every day I've got a website that keeps track of every country in the world's COVID cases.
Okay.
And posts them every day. And so you could track the curve and you can really see in the past, I'm going to say 10 days, maybe a little bit more, you could see a flattening of the curve worldwide. As the Northern Hemisphere moved into fall, where the vast majority of human beings live, you saw the numbers go up. Now it's flattening out. That's what I saw. And the World Health Organization's chief says, yeah, there actually is a little encouraging news. Now, you know, he doesn't want you to get carried away, but he talked about this at a news conference in Geneva yesterday.
Last week saw the first decline in newly reported cases globally since September due to a decrease in cases in Europe thanks to the effectiveness of difficult but necessary measures put in place in recent weeks.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus of the World Health Organization. And he warned, though, you heard him say it, it's because tighter measures have been put in place, so it's not time to get complacent.
This is welcome news, but it must be interpreted with extreme caution. Gains can easily be lost. and there was still an increase in cases in most other regions of the world.
Also, you could see that the number of people dying is going up, too. Now, that tends to trail the number of new cases, so those numbers could start to go down as well. The other piece of good news, though, of course, is there's a vaccine, or two, or three, maybe four or five before long. That is good news, and it's good news for humanity in general when people start to get the vaccine, even if we don't get it first here in Canada. I'm not an idiot, and I'm not naive. I know that since we didn't manufacture vaccines, we should have been, but we don't. We should have been building the capability, I would say, sometime around last January or February. You know, when China was building emergency hospitals?
Yeah.
Maybe that was December.
Slapping those together.
Well, what did we learn from SARS? Do we have a capability to make vaccines here? Maybe the Prime Minister shouldn't have been bragging about us being ready to manufacture them back in the summer if we weren't ready. Anyway, put all that behind us. We are where we are. Fine. I know we're not going to be first in line. But it's still good as people get vaccinated around the world. It means the spread of the virus will start to diminish worldwide. The problem is we know how regional this is. Look what's going on right now. It's all over Toronto and Peel, and much less here in Ottawa. I mean, we're just miles down the road. But people are traveling from there and coming here and bringing it with them. So as people get vaccinated in the U.S. and travel here, that makes it safer for us. I just wonder how many of those countries are going to say, no, we don't. Canadians aren't even vaccinated yet. We don't want you here. But could you blame them?
Yeah.
Anyway, Moderna, as you heard yesterday, is seeking emergency use approval from American and European regulators. And I wondered aloud yesterday, well, why not ask Canada? Turns out because we ask for the information all the way through the testing, they don't have to ask us to make a final decision.
Okay.
We can already make that. And presumably they sent us the final testing results. If not, the people at Health Canada surely have newspapers and are asking for it now. Can we see you released new numbers to the U.S. and the U.K.'s regulators yesterday? Could you send it along? So hopefully we're not behind there. But clearly we're not first in line. Moderna's been saying we're not last in line. So where are we in line? Don't tell me we cut deals without saying where we are in line. Before they handed our money over, I hope they know. Are we fourth, fifth, tenth? Yeah. We need to know that so we can plan. Anyway, Dr. Abdu Sharkawi is an infectious disease expert, and he says the data that we're seeing, 94% effective rate for Moderna, but even more effective in preventing severe cases, he says that's good news. The results are promising.
At the fact that there was no severe disease whatsoever in the vaccine group is really reassuring. This is exciting. This gives us some motivation and some hope that if we can hang on and do what we're supposed to be doing for a while longer, we've got a great prospect ahead of us for being able to control this pandemic.
Problem is, we don't know how much longer we have to hold on. And it's not encouraging when the federal government has kind of said, well, we won't be the first to get it. We won't be the last. Does that mean we have to hang on an extra, what, week, a month, 3 months, 5 months? I'd like to know how long we have to dig in. Because when people don't know, you know what they're going to do? They're going to go to anti-mask protests, yeah, like we're seeing. They're just going to say, we don't have a vaccine coming. I can't wait to get on with my life. I've had enough of this.
For sure.
I'll take my chances. Our premier here in Ontario, Doug Ford, getting a little antsy about this as well. He's pushing hard to get a date.
I have to get answers. I have to get answers. I've been asking the federal government. We need to know when we're getting it, you know, how much we're getting and what we're getting. There's different vaccines out there. So to be perfectly frank, I'm not any more comfortable than I was last week.
Yeah, join the club. He says he's watching the vaccine updates in other countries and getting a little nervous.
We hear stories from around the world. You know, I've read a story that UK might be starting their vaccines on December the 7th. Well, we need answers. And we've worked very collaboratively with the federal government. But, you know, we need the answers.
Sounds like he's losing his patience,
yeah,
with the federal government. And so he should be.
Hard to blame him.
There's no reason they can't disclose the details of our agreements with these vaccine companies? What's the agreement say? Does it give just a general sense of, because they're saying, Moderna's saying we'll get some of the first batch. Do we get the last part of the first batch? What percentage of the first batch do we get? Do we get it before the UK gets it? Do we get it after? Do we get it before Australia, after Australia? How are you prioritizing it? Maybe the agreement says countries with the highest rate of COVID-19 at the time that it's developed and manufactured will get more vaccine. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. This is our deal. This is our money. We have a right to know as Canadians. The premier actually made some calls to these pharmaceutical companies on his own, apparently, yesterday. Doesn't sound like he got the answers. Oh, they probably said, check with your prime minister. He's the guy we signed the deal with. 7:15, the morning rush.
Tell me straight, Doc, what is it?
Medical myth-busting with Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Well, we get to talk about something that is not COVID-19 today, Doc. It'll be a nice change of pace, I think.
Wow, there's something else in the world.
Yeah, who knew, right?
That's right.
This one, though, is kind of still a sensitive area for me, having lost my mother just 6 weeks ago. She was suffering from dementia, and anyone who's been through this with a family member, a loved one, knows it's a bizarre and heartbreaking thing to see the person you love slowly leave you a bit at a time. And then they have moments where you feel like it's really them, and then moments where they're totally lost. And my mother ultimately died of a fall, and I think, you know, she still knew me most days, so I feel like I lost some time there. But I don't even know, before we get into the Alzheimer's thing specifically, the doctors called it dementia. They thought it was stage 3 or 4. Dementia, Alzheimer's, are they the same? Are they sometimes the same? Can you explain the difference?
Yeah, dementia is what happens if you have Alzheimer's, but there are other diseases that can cause dementia. So dementia is the end result of the disease, but many diseases can cause that.
So can you tell which one it is?
Usually you can tell by evaluation of someone. So you can have somebody, for example, that has vascular dementia. That is, they've had numerous small strokes that damage the brain over time. And you see those on scans, on CT or MRIs, you'll see those scans. And so you can tell what we call the etiology or the cause of it is. Sometimes you have what's called mixed dementias, which are combinations of strokes and Alzheimer's. So there are different conditions that can lead to dementia, but having dementia does not mean you necessarily have had Alzheimer's.
Okay. So this blood test that we're hearing, the first blood test of its type, does it sound promising? And ultimately, what does it do to aid in patient care?
Well, and that's the key question. Well, first off, this test has not been approved by the U.S. FDA, and test results haven't been published. So right away, that's a red flag. You've got to say, well, why didn't you go through the proper process to evaluate, first of all, how accurate the test is, especially as you let off, Bill, but how devastating a diagnosis this can be and how it affects families. To have a blood test that is not verified, then say that you might have Alzheimer's or, you know, for any kind of thing you're doing, that you may have something, and then you may not. And that in itself is devastating as well. So having a test, and the importance of having a test is if the test allows you to alter your management or intervene at an earlier time that can alter the outcome or at least slow down the pace at which something changes. And in this case, this is not going to do that, right? This is a blood test that hasn't even been verified. I would not hang my hat on this unless we actually knew how accurate it was. So in this case, yes, having tests are a good thing if it changes something, but
what are they testing for? Is it some sort of genetic marker so you could be 10 years old and have this test and know that in 50 years from now this might be an issue? Or do you actually have to have Alzheimer's and it's active in changing your system before the test would show it?
So what this is doing is it's measuring a couple of proteins called amyloid particles. Amyloid is what is thought to be one of the causes of Alzheimer's. So these amyloid proteins sort of gum everything up. And so they build up over time. And it's one of the hypotheses of what causes Alzheimer's. It's not been completely verified. There likely are many other factors. But they are doing this test to see if they have a gene that has that, meaning that they're looking to see if they have these amyloid particles. But again,
all right, let's say we had a test that has been peer reviewed and we know that it works.
Sure.
That's a leap from where we are today with this announcement. But let's take the leap just for a moment.
Right.
Would that help you as a physician do anything differently? So I take the test. My mother had dementia. I'm worried. I take the test. Got a guy my age. I test positive. I'm going to have Alzheimer's or already do. What do you do differently?
You don't do very much until someone, you know, the medications that we have available are used to slow down the symptoms or the deterioration of Alzheimer's or at least memory problems. But if you're not having memory problems at the moment, there's not much you're going to do. And you know,
so early intervention wouldn't change anything.
Intervention is not going to change anything. The inevitable, unfortunately, is going to happen. So, and that's what I mean by doing a test, right? If the test is, if all the test does now is tell you that you're going to get this, and I then say to you, well, you know, that's great that you know this. You know, what do we do about it? It can really, you know, it's
well, you'd ruin what good life I have left. That's what you do.
Exactly. So, so right now, I really, for me, I wouldn't really do this test. There's other ways to detect Alzheimer's in someone right now that we have available on the basis of them developing symptoms, where you can then do scans, you can do other stuff that really, you do memory testing, you do a whole bunch of things. But right now, to do this kind of test that they're offering when it is not accurate, or at least there's no evidence that it's accurate, is going to create a lot of unhappy people, and unnecessarily so.
All right. There's some myths busted right there. Thanks, Doc.
You're very welcome, Bill.
Medical myth busting. Dr. Barry Dworkin, also the host of, what's that called again? I forget. No, I don't. I still remember. Sunday House Call. Sunday afternoons at 3. Nothing to joke about, I guess. We've just been through it. So, you know, that's what you do. And you try to laugh it off. But I wouldn't want to know. Not unless there's something they can do about it. Sunday House Call. Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA. I'm just right here dancing.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You play with my heart, and I'll be singing la 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 la. You're breaking me, la 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 la. 7:23, good morning, as I mentioned. We're going to feature every day on this station. Each host will dedicate one segment to the people in our community making a difference during these difficult times. This guy makes a difference every year. Because in the world he lives in, for some people, times are always difficult, but I'm sure even more so right now. The executive chef, Rick Watson, director of food services at the Ottawa Mission, is on the line. Good morning, Rick. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
What are you seeing about a difference in need right now? Has that changed? Has COVID-19 led to more people just going hungry?
You know, I've worked at the Ottawa Mission for almost 19 years now, so I thought that I had seen it all. And but I was so wrong. When COVID hit, the need for people to get food was just so evident. People were going hungry, and it's, you know, I knew that there was always a need to provide meals, but I didn't know it was as big as it is. It's just unbelievable. So, like, even for example, like in our dining room before COVID hit, we were serving 1,400 meals a day. And currently we're serving over 2,000 meals a day. Yeah, so the numbers are just skyrocketing. And
well, you know what? The 1,400 number, which I've heard before from you, always blows my mind. But 2,000 meals a day. Now, is it harder to serve those meals too? First of all, you have more to do. But is it harder because of the COVID-19 restrictions? Surely it changes how you prepare these meals and how you deliver them.
Absolutely. Like, we used to have everyone come into our dining room, and obviously that can't happen with the COVID situation. So we're handing meals out our garage door in bags to our community guests that used to be able to come in and eat three meals a day. We also we now have a food truck on the road that's going to 13 low-income communities, passing out 400 meals a day. So that's 2,000 meals just coming from that food truck. The need is unbelievable.
Do you make a decision about who needs the meal or not, or they just show up and you give out the meal? No questions asked.
There's no questions asked. If you're hungry, we're going to make sure you eat.
Can't imagine many people would take the free meal just for the sake of it. It's got to be, for many people, I'm sure, it can be embarrassing to need a handout.
Absolutely embarrassing, for sure. It's, you know, it's sad and degrading. And now that the situation is, like, when we open our garage door at 1 o'clock for our community guests, and there's a lineup around the block, social distancing as well. And so to stand in that lineup, it reminds me of when I was a kid watching, like, an old prisoner of war movie, these people waiting in line to get some food or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or the images we saw from the Great Depression.
Yes, exactly.
Soup kitchens.
Exactly.
What kind of meals do you serve, Rick?
Well, like, we try to do the best we can, and we have lots of community partners. So, like, today we're actually serving chicken, rice, and vegetables. We serve very hearty. We make sure people get healthy meals because they're not getting that all the time or hardly ever. So we make sure when they come here, they're going to get a good meal.
You assume that that's probably the only meal they're having that day?
Sometimes, and that's with the bag we're handing out to our community guests. The bag actually has three meals in it. So one's a hot meal they can eat right away, and they normally do as soon as they could get that bag. And the other two are cold meals that they could take home or wherever they may be going and have something for later on.
If they're lucky enough to have a home to go to.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. So you have an increased need, fewer people to give, because people who used to give now probably are on the receiving end, some of them. How are you managing, and how can we help you?
Well, you know, we're managing, but it's getting tougher and tougher as time goes by. And, you know, we're relying on our donors, and the donors have been kind. But as I said, the increase in the meal needs is there. So if anyone wants to donate, they can go to OttawaMission.com and they can donate there. But, yeah.
Well, you guys are truly amazing, Rick. It's always good to talk to you, and always kind of depressing at the same time, because the rest of us go back to our lives and we forget that you're in the middle of this every single day. And it's great that people like you are willing to give up their time, and this is what they do with their life. So thank you for doing that, and we appreciate it. We're glad we could help in some way by drawing attention to your good work.
Thank you very much for having me on, sir.
Executive Chef Rick Watson, Director of Food Services at the Ottawa Mission. I know it's a lot to ask, but if you can help them out, you know it's a good cause. 7:28, The Morning Rush.
Now back to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I see the story about trying to remove Rick Chiarelli from City Council has popped back up in the news again. No doubt I'll get some angry texts and emails like I did last time I brought this up, but you're really not listening to me. You're really not. I mean, this sounds arrogant, but it's not. This is politics 101. This is grade 9 political science. If it's too easy for anyone other than the citizens to remove someone from office, you don't have a democracy. It should be really hard to remove an elected official from public office. Really hard. There has to be the strictest protocol in place imaginable, or you don't have a democracy. So it's tough. You look at Rick Chiarelli and forget even the allegations against him. The fact that the guy never shows up to represent his constituents is appalling. So he makes a very poor poster boy for my argument. And I'm not saying under no circumstances should you be able to fire an elected official. I'm just saying it has to be really difficult. Otherwise, members of city council or any other elected body who don't like somebody's politics could come up with ways to throw them out of office, especially if there are allegations of impropriety or criminality. You got to be able to prove that. And I would say a court's probably the best mechanism. Although I do think if someone doesn't ever show up for work, then you should probably be able to dump them. Unless they can prove, and he seems to have been able to prove, that he does have an illness. Now, it seems a little too convenient at times, but the guy had some heart surgery. Don't know why it's taking him this long to get back to work. So I think there should be some tough questions there. So that's what I said about it. I don't see why anyone would disagree with that. It is a democracy. We choose who we elect, and we get to fire you at the end of your term. That's the way it should work. 99.9% of the time. Is Rick Chiarelli that 0.1? Maybe. Maybe he is. But a former Ottawa City Councillor who's now a member of Provincial Parliament is weighing in on this one. Orleans Liberal MPP Stephen Blais. Here's what he's saying about it.
It is time for the government to set an example and take action to let it be known that elected officials won't be treated any differently than any other employee in any other workplace. There must be a system put in place to stop elected officials from abusing the trust and authority placed in them. And if necessary, remove them from office for violating this trust.
How colossally stupid is that statement? Seriously. Orleans, you elected this guy? An elected official should be treated the same as any other employee? Come on. Do you really believe that? That an elected official is just, you hire them, you can just fire them? No, because only the boss should be able to fire the person they hired. The boss is the people of where does he represent? Is it Orleans?
He's in the people
of Orleans.
Ricciarelli's in College Ward, sorry.
Sorry?
College Ward Nepean.
Totally opposite end of the city.
That's right. Sorry, I was thinking
I'm mixing
Blais
it up because Stephen Blais was a city councilor for Orleans.
Bingo.
Now, it's also interesting that Stephen Blais said politicians should be removed from office when they have abused the trust and authority placed in them. I say let's use that theory, his own words, to fire Stephen Blais, who abused the trust and authority placed in him when he ran for city council and 5 minutes later traded up for a better job, a higher paying job with the provincial government. What about that violation of trust and authority placed in him by the people of Orleans? Steve, you don't see the irony there? Come on, man.
Good point.
That was appalling. He just got elected, which is a promise to serve the people. Now, somebody gets elected and 3 months before their term ends, they decide to run for a different level of government. That's fine.
That's
I can live with that.
Sure.
But he'd been elected reelected for 5 minutes. Ooh, better job just came up. Breaking his promise to the people of Orleans. And you know why I have not, up until now, called for him to be fired from his job? Because he got elected, and I believe only the people of Orleans can throw him out of the provincial legislature. But isn't Stephen Blais lucky we're judging him by a different standard than he wants to judge Ricciarelli? Play that clip again. It's so colossally. It's like you really didn't attend grade 9 poli-science. Listen to this.
It is time for the government to set an example and take action to let it be known that elected officials won't be treated any differently than any other employee in any other workplace.
Just stop them right there. Elected officials are not any different than any other employee in any other workplace. That alone should disqualify him from his job, right there. Then he goes on to say they should be removed from offices for abusing the trust and authority placed in them, says the guy who was trusted to be their city councilor and immediately ran in a provincial by-election.
Yeah, that's a bit rich.
It's a lot. I forget, was it a by-election or the regular election? I forget now. But I know he was a city councilor.
It was a by-election, the provincial by-election for sure.
Unbelievable. I laughed out loud when I heard that last night. Still laughing. Except that, you know, that guy's in charge of something. Our public safety minister, Bill Blair, is pledging new gun control measures because people who break the law will finally obey. You just find the right law. Oh, I'm willing to kill. I'm willing to sell drugs. I'm willing to do whatever. But I will not violate your gun laws. That's a bridge too far for the average gangbanger. Right there. I'm not doing that. Buyback of recently outlawed firearms. Tougher storage provisions. Steps to control handguns. Heidi Ruthen, the coordinator of the group, Polly Sauvien, told an online news conference yesterday that several months later, there are no signs of any progress on Bill Blair's much talked about new gun control.
We urge Minister Blair to return to the gun file with force and to aim to meet his commitments without delay.
Would it be Polly Sauvien? I just know my wife and completely bilingual kids are in the car right now going, what the hell is he trying to say?
Sacre bleu!
You can't say
No one from Quebec actually ever says that. That's just on cartoons in the U.S.
And when they like kiss, that, they go, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, have you ever actually heard, because I live with a house full of French Canadians.
Oh, yeah.
I've never actually heard them say in English side by each.
Yeah, I've never, honestly, I've never heard anyone. I grew up in Orleans. I've never heard anyone other than Pepe Le Pew say that once.
Right, side by each other. That's, yeah. But no, they don't actually say that. I've heard many other good ones.
Yeah.
But the more I try to speak French, the less I make fun of my wife's English.
Yeah, because, it's probably for the best.
Yeah. Plus, I've known her for so long now. She started to speak English at 20. And it's pretty good now.
Yeah, she speaks better English and French than me. So I just...
She does.
I don't mess around with Sylvie.
I read her written English, I think, wow, your grammar is way better than mine. This is your second language. So
you teach English as a first language.
Very impressive. 744. So I still don't know how to pronounce that organization.
Yeah, you and me both.
It means multi something. Pretty sure.
Multiple?
The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Cinnabon Frosting. Give up.
Disinfect the halls with sanitizer. Fa la 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 la. Until we get a cure from Pfizer. Fa la 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 la.
And now, Trips Clips.
The Quarantine 15.
It's beginning to look a lot like pneumonia.
Good morning, Mr. Dave Tripp, doing double duty this week in for Matt Harris, who last I saw was feeding a baby.
That's right. He's got a pretty good excuse this week. I'm happy to fill in while, you know, he takes care of that little baby for its first few days on this planet. Very happy for him.
I envy him. It looks so cozy at home. Little baby girl in his arms. I'm jealous.
Right?
I want another one.
I haven't even had one yet, Bill. You just... You know, go hug
yours. I'm getting greedy now. Okay.
Right?
Fair enough.
All right, Bill, I got a couple different things on Trips Clips today. The first is an interview. It's trending like crazy right now. It's from earlier this week. George Clooney. The guy has been a sex symbol for decades, since I was a kid. You know, he was on ER. He had the sweet flow. Then he became all these other things. I mean, he's one of the biggest movie stars on Earth.
I have seen him in person. So before you get carried away, yeah, he's actually...
He's that
still
good,
that handsome.
That good looking. Yeah. He's like a...
Maybe more so.
He's like a bottle of fine wine. The guy just keeps getting better looking. Well, turns out, listen to this, Bill. He owes a lot of his looks to a secret device.
Really?
So, years ago, I bought a thing called a Flowbee, which when we
you
were...
You did kid, not.
When I was a kid. Yeah.
The infomercial, the Flowbee.
Do you remember the Flowbee, Bill?
Googling it right now. I don't remember a Flowbee.
Okay, so this
I'm a Flowbee away from George Clooney?
You might be a Flowbee away from George Clooney. Let me refresh your memory. I got the commercial right here.
This ingenious device lets you give yourself and family perfect haircuts every time. Before the Flowbee, only a skilled professional could produce a good layered haircut. Tens of thousands have been sold to satisfied customers. Why? Because it really works.
Proper suction is the key to getting great-looking haircuts with no cleanup.
You remember it now? It's the one with the
vacuum.
Yes,
it's a vacuum cleaner that you cut your hair and it sucks the hair right up into the vacuum. It cuts and cleans at the same time.
Oh, my goodness. Anybody looking at that's like, that thing's going to kill me. You know what I mean? Turns out George Clooney actually bought one and has been using it for years. George freaking Clooney.
It yes. comes with a vacuum cleaner yes. and the clippers? Yeah, I still have it.
Stop it. You don't use it.
My haircuts take literally... 2 minutes. I go,
is this Flowbee?
Yeah, it's Flowbee.
That is awesome.
Yeah, listen, man, it works.
He says, I'm not brave enough to let my wife use it. But other than that, he swears by the Flowbee. I'm telling you, this is rocketing up my Christmas list. I'm going to be the next George Clooney.
Think of the money he saves. He
saves hundreds of years in haircuts a year. That Flowbee's paid itself off dozens of times, Bill. Unbelievable. I was so happy to find that. George Clooney... At the end of the day, you know, he looks for shortcuts just like every other lazy guy like
hey,
me on Earth.
Back in April, we all would have tried a Flowbee.
Oh, 100%. Are you kidding me? Anyway, I got one more. You already alluded to this early on. Another trending video. It's election related. Politics definitely isn't for everyone. This election was a handful. Lots going on. We're talking about voter fraud, recounts, no concessions. It was a lot to take in. Well, one YouTuber decided to make an analogy using sports. So this is what an NHL hockey game would sound like if it played out like
the 2020 U.S. election. Enjoy.
A huge 7-3 lead for the Montreal Canadiens as we enter the final seconds of the game.
Wow, that is a big victory for the Canadiens. Yeah,
easy there, buddy. It's not over yet.
Well, I mean, no, it is. It is over now.
No. We still don't know who won this thing. The Bruins still have a shot here.
The game is over. The Montreal Canadiens got more goals than the Boston Bruins, so, you know, that's about it.
But the game's not over just because the sports channel says it's over.
Well, but no, it is. It is.
You don't even know where some of those goals came from.
We do. They keep track of every single goal. They know exactly who did them.
Nothing is official till the National Hockey League declares a winner.
It's pretty official.
Yeah, I'd say we still have a long way to go here for sure.
I don't think we do.
I bet if you recount those goals, a lot of them are actually for the Bruins.
How would that be possible?
Also, some of the players on the Canadiens are dead. They shouldn't be allowed to score goals.
I don't think any of the players are dead.
Here he is. Bruins coach is going to talk now.
Okay.
Frankly, I don't think we have lost this game. We still have a lot of avenues to pursue. You look at some of the referees that were on the ice. Nobody knows where these referees came from. We have to figure out where the referees came from. If you stop counting the goals in the second period when we were ahead, we win this thing easily.
Aha, you see?
Why would they stop counting goals?
Some breaking news now. The coach of the Boston Bruins is suing the National Hockey League over the results of the latest game.
Okay, now this game's getting interesting.
Oh my God.
Two things to say about that. One, fantastic analogy. Two, what a typical Bruins fan right there. Let me tell you, wrap one up in a bow. They're the worst.
You notice they made it the Montreal Canadiens versus the Bruins, because if it had been the Leafs and the Bruins, you know who won, and no one would dispute it.
Yeah, not good.
I guess the Bruins' goals are mailed in, so they're counted last at the end of the third period, just when you think the Leafs had won. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
The Morning Rush continues with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Thanks to our finance minister for mentioning insolvency. That's good to know. I don't think she was talking about the country. I think she's talking about us personally. She will keep us from insolvency. Thanks. You're really putting a nice positive spin on
Seriously. All
of this. Appreciate it. Why are they taking this opportunity to delve into more provincial territory with long-term care and pharmacare and all that? Don't remake our country from the bottom up during a pandemic. I don't even want to hear about Netflix taxes right now. Mm-hmm. That's all we have, by the way. Don't leave the house. Just stay home and watch TV, and we're going to tax you. And I'm a broadcaster saying that. I think long-term we probably do need a tax on these foreign companies that come into our country, take advertising dollars out, take money out of the system, leaving Canadian broadcasters to lay people off. These are my friends, my colleagues, possibly me. So, sure, I've got a conflict of interest there. So I think we do probably need to move on taxing these services. But not right now. And anyway, why would you tax Netflix only to give it back to other... Okay, we're taking money from Netflix. So, Dave, give me your money for Netflix. There you go. Now take it back in CERB.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey, Matt, give me some. Yeah, come on. You're watching Netflix. Give me the money. Here you go. That's for your new baby. Well, you took it out of one pocket, put it in the other, except that in between, some of it got lost through the bureaucratic process where money gets smaller, not bigger. What are they even doing? Just get us through the crisis with temporary measures. Don't build in structural deficits. Don't build in permanent spending. Wait till you see what the new world is going to look like. This idea, I heard the word yesterday for the first time. This is a she-demic. Have you heard this?
No.
She-demic. It's a pandemic, but it hurts women more than men. They're the ones losing their jobs. So let's give more money to women. Absolutely. While they're laid off, just give the money to people who need the money. I don't care what their gender is. But let's not assume that they will never get their jobs back and make the spending permanent. What are they thinking? Anyway, here's Chrystia Freeland, the real prime minister and the deputy prime minister. And for the purposes of yesterday's non-budget, here's Chrystia Freeland.
We will do whatever it takes to help Canadians stay healthy, safe, and solvent. We will invest in every necessary public health measure and we will support Canadian families and Canadian businesses in a deliberate, prudent, and effective way.
And because the Liberals can't get anyone elected in Alberta, she never lets a moment pass to point out the fact that, you know, she's from Alberta. She doesn't live there now. It hasn't for a long time, but she's from Alberta here. It came up.
Canada's farmers spend the winter fixing their tractors, combines, and seed drills, and stocking up on supplies. While the ground is frozen, they get ready for seeding when the earth thaws. Like all those great Canadian farmers, the work we do today will stand us in good stead in the spring.
See, she knows all about it. She drove past a farm when she was a kid.
That's true.
Says she's laying the foundation for a Canada-wide early learning and childcare system.
Canada will not be truly competitive until all Canadian women have access to the affordable childcare we need to support our
The house is on fire and she's laying foundations.
Yeah.
Did I interrupt that or was she done? Oh,
there was some more still.
They're going to spend, we'll play the rest of it.
Canada country's workforce.
Bravo.
Our participation in our country's workforce.
Bravo.
Yeah, bravo. Conservative finance critic Pierre Poilievre accused the Liberals of leading our country into some very dangerous territory.
We are not at the cliff or even on the edge of the cliff, but we can now see the cliff, and this government is running towards it as quickly as humanly possible.
Pierre, I'm sure, would be the first one to agree that they used to talk about massive deficits in terms of gross domestic product. Well, it's such a small part of gross domestic product. This is not a, it's not an issue. Well, they're not saying that anymore because we're close to the record levels where Paul Martin brought in austerity measures because our debt was just blinding at the time. We're getting much closer to that level of GDP. So now they're talking about interest rates are really low. The prime minister's talking, interest rates are really low. The finance minister, interest rates are low. We'll be fine. Yeah, but interest rates can go back up and the debt is still the debt. Probably have accused the Liberals of letting us all down.
With the highest unemployment, other than Italy and all of the G7, they were expecting a plan for paychecks. Instead, they got a plan for more credit card debts.
In fact, Conservative leader Erin O'Toole told the House of Commons, the Liberals have no real plan at all to get the country beyond this pandemic and on to full recovery.
Without a plan for vaccines, there can be no long-term plan for our economy. Without rapid testing in wide distribution, we've missed out on a critical medium-term tool, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, I guess they're hoping we'll stop talking about the vaccine that everybody else is about to get, and they won't even tell us what their agreement is. Are we second in line, third in line, fourth in line? Do we get it after everybody in the U.S. is vaccinated? It seems like we're going to get at least the Moderna one. We'll get some from the first batch.
Okay.
We're not at the... All Moderna's saying, and it's funny how the media put a nice positive spin on it for the Liberals. The media said, hey, it turns out we're close to the front of the line. No, what Moderna's CEO actually said was, we're not at the back of the line.
That's right.
We could be second back of the line. I assume we're closer to the front of the line, but how close? And give me a relative date. Like, I don't need to know January 17th. But you could tell me after we've administered 10 million vaccines in the U.S., Canada will get it. Okay. And I'm watching very closely.
For sure.
I'm hunkered down in my basement, taking all the precautions, wearing my mask, just waiting for the vaccine to start. Now I got an idea of what it is. They won't even tell us. They must be very embarrassed with the deal that they've cut here. They must be very embarrassed. There's even a little talk that this financial statement, we haven't had a budget since March last year. Why isn't there a full budget? Anyway, there's talk this could be a confidence motion and that the other parties in the House may bring them down. I don't see it. I see the NDP, who've shown under Jagmeet Singh they have no principles at all. I don't see him bringing them down. He did do some complaining yesterday. The fall economic update has left millions of people with virtually no aid.
They have not put in place the help to sectors that are in need. I think about the aerospace and workers of the airline industries, workers in the tourist sectors. The workers of the hardest hit sectors can't count on any help.
You know what could help all of those sectors? A vaccine.
Yeah, seriously.
Speedy access to a vaccine.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
Caller number 10 from Ottawa is Rosie. Good morning, Rosie.
Good morning. How are you?
You're calling from the Bywood Market?
No. Center, but not that close.
Okay, just wanted to make sure you weren't at the CTV Weather Center.
Shouldn't you be doing traffic right now? Or weather?
What would Rosie be doing? Traffic. What's
That's
wrong
true.
You?
I'm very yeah,
so it's not our Rosie. It's a different Rosie.
All right. Oh, yeah.
She's not eligible, is my point. All right, here are the rules, Rosie.
10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
Yes.
Here we go. Question number one. According to a poll, what percentage of Canadians don't care if other countries get vaccines first?
48%.
What percentage answered that they don't care at all or are not planning to get vaccinated anyway?
48%.
Hospitals in which city are being asked to ration oxygen use?
Pass.
Name the local MPP who's trying to change the rules which would see city councillors removed from office in cases of serious misconduct.
Stephen Blay.
How much new money has the federal government committed in its new fiscal update?
48,000.
How many new COVID-19 cases were there in Ottawa yesterday?
29.
What device does George Clooney use to cut his hair?
Flo-B.
Who is Canada's public safety minister?
Pass.
Which ward does Rick Shirelli represent on city council?
Pass.
How many days did an Australian woman ignore an email saying she had won 150 grand?
7.
All right, let's see how you did. I think you got a little confused and you corrected one that you didn't have to, and it messed you up on the next one. And
Rosie, let's check the scoreboard here. According to a poll, what percentage of Canadians don't care if other countries get vaccinated first? You said 48, which is right. And then you turned back, but we wouldn't let you. Then we asked you what percentage of the same poll answered that they don't care at all or are not planning to get vaccinated anyway. You said 48% again. This time I was wrong. That was 10%. Hospitals in what city are being asked to ration oxygen use? You passed. Calgary. Name the local MPP who's trying to change the rules, which could see city councillors removed from office in cases of serious misconduct. You said Stephen Blay. How much money has the federal government committed to its new fiscal update? You said 48,000. Tried to say 48 billion, but it was only 25 billion. Thank heavens. How many new COVID-19 cases were there in Ottawa yesterday? You said 29. What device does George Clooney use to cut his hair? You said the Flo-B. Who is Canada's public safety minister? You passed. Bill Blair. What ward does Rick Shirelli represent in council? You passed. College ward. How many days did an Australian woman ignore emails saying that she had won $150,000? You said 7. You were looking for 10. But still not a bad effort.
Yeah, and we would have taken 40% because I misspoke earlier and said it was 40% because that's how I heard it. Now that I read it, it is 48%. They're not concerned about getting a vaccine first. Really? What the hell is wrong with us?
Unbelievable.
48%. Let everybody else get it. We'll just stay at home. Watch grandma die. We'll be fine with that. No big deal. All right, how'd she do?
$40 for Rosie this morning.
Oh, I tried my best. Sorry for me.
We appreciate it, Rosie. You did pretty well. Don't even worry about it.
Okay, thank you.
There you go. Rosie from Ottawa, not from the CTV Weather Center. $40 richer, and we're all richer for her participation. It's 8:28, the morning rush, and we're going to get our share of these vaccines. We paid for them.
I have to get answers. I have to get answers. I've been asking the federal government. We need to know when we're getting it, you know, how much we're getting, and what we're getting. There's different vaccines out there. So to be perfectly frank, I'm not any more comfortable than I was last week.
One expert on vaccines, I saw him this morning, said he would be shocked if our agreement with these vaccine companies does not outline the general plan. Like, you'll get 10% of the first batch, but you're fourth in line.
Okay.
He said it's got to contain that information. Otherwise, you can't do any planning. And if it doesn't, if it does contain that, we have a right to know, because we are literally talking about life and death. We're talking about damage to our economy. We're talking about encouraging us to behave in a more careful way because we know exactly when the cavalry is going to arrive. If that information is there, we need to have it. We have a right to have it. We paid for it. These are extraordinary times. This is the worst crisis most of us will face in our lifetime. The government has no right to keep that information from us. And if they're not telling us, is it because they didn't even get that written in? Did we negotiate such bad deals that we don't have that information to give? There's a lot here. This is not 48% of us just shrug it off because we think we're going to get it in January. Premier says he's watching these vaccine updates in other countries and getting nervous.
We hear stories from around the world. And you know, I've read a story that UK might be doing, starting their vaccines on December the 7th. Well, we need answers. And we've worked very collaboratively with the federal government. But, you know, we need the answers.
So the Premier is being very vocal. The opposition on Parliament Hill is being very vocal about this. A lot of Canadians are starting to ask really tough questions. What about Moderna? What are they saying? It looks like one of the vaccines. We know we bought into this. It looks like it'll be easier to distribute in a country like Canada. It doesn't require the level of capacity to freeze at ultra-low temperatures. So that's a good one. Moderna's chief medical officer, Tal Zaks, doesn't believe Canada is behind in the race, at least not with their vaccine.
I don't think Canada has been at the back of the line at all. First amounts to roll off the assembly line, so to speak, will happen towards the very end of this year, beginning of next year. Significant quantities, that's first quarter of next year.
First quarter is a wide window.
That's right.
Last I checked, that's 25% of the year. So we could be March or April. So you don't know. Tal Zaks, who's their chief medical officer, doesn't know specifically than that. Okay, we're not at the back of the line.
Okay.
But how close are we to the front of the line? Are we closer to the back of the line or the front of the line? And first quarter could mean January 1st, or it could mean March 31st. 30 days has September, April, June, November. Yeah.
That's a big window.
It's a huge window. And we're losing 40 people a day right now. 40 people. That's almost 2 an hour. 2 an hour.
Wow.
Since I started to talk about this at 6 o'clock this morning, we've lost 2, 4, 6, maybe 8 people. Wow. Possibly another one while I'm talking. And they keep telling us that's only going to get worse before it gets better. Because the lockdowns they've done in our major cities, we won't see an improvement on the daily case numbers for at least 2 weeks. And the number of people who've already tested positive may not get sick enough to be hospitalized for another few days or a week. And they may be there for 3 or 4 days before these poor people succumb, including a 10-year-old boy out west.
Yeah, yesterday. I saw that.
Or someone less than 10 years old. Well, they had underlying conditions. Well, that's probably cold comfort to the parents.
Sure.
So Tal Zaks, this guy from Moderna, he's not really saying, he's just spinning us.
That's what it seems like.
Says they've asked American and European regulators to allow emergency use of the drug.
When I saw the final results last night, they came in a little bit earlier than we had planned for. I allowed myself to cry for the first time.
Yeah, one of the people in their test actually died of COVID-19, but they were in the placebo group. So he looked at that and said, you know, our vaccine is saving lives. It's great work. We just want to know. Within 2 weeks, give me a window of 2 weeks. When do you suppose we'll get it and how many? We paid for it. We'd like to know the answer to that question. And great, we got the study. We got the information. Why can't we have more information than that? It's a lot of Canadians dying in the meantime. And it feels crass when you just put it in that perspective to add, but it's important. How many businesses will close if it takes 3 extra months before
Absolutely.
We get it? How many businesses? What if you owned a business? Wouldn't you like to know? We're going to be a month behind the Americans. Okay. Got a plan for that. Because remember, those who did the Leger poll, when they said January, February, that was a very optimistic question. It wasn't a very realistic one. It's almost like they wanted to spin it to help the Liberal government. But anyway, I'm sure they were doing their best. But that's a very leading question. Okay, that's still the, we don't even know how many. That may not be enough to vaccinate all the people in our seniors' homes or wow. many of our first-line workers.
Yeah.
Is it 100 doses? Is it 1 million? Is it 5 million?
Also, Bill, what happens if another spike happens in that window, right? The businesses have to shut down again. I mean, it could be disastrous.
Well, there's going to be another spike. It's called Christmas.
Yeah.
You could pretty much count on it. So I'm glad the premier's getting mad. I think he needs to get more mad. 8:46, the morning rush.
Now, the inbox. Everybody's talking about. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
All right, Chris in Kanata says, so as I hear the Liberals say, they will take care of all Canadians' health needs. I wonder how the Indigenous communities feel about that as they open their bottled water for the 1,000th time. I would think because it's common sense that clean drinking water is a necessity of life. Of course, because of COVID, the Liberals had to break another promise from 2015 to fix the water problems. Uh-huh. It's Stephen Harper's fault anyway. Go Liberals. Thank you, Chris. Good morning, Bill. The same trust, authority, and promise to the people of Orleans was disregarded by Marie-France Lalonde, the MP for Orleans. Yeah, I was talking about Stephen Blais, the member of provincial parliament, who said Rick Shirelli should be fired because he violated the trust of the people. And elected officials are no different than any other employee, really. Somebody needs to give Stephen Blais a lesson on how democracy works. They should also give him a lesson on the trust you get from voters, because they trusted him to be their local city council member. Then 5 minutes later, he ran for a seat that was vacated provincially. This email, Peter, wants to remind us that after winning the provincial seat in 2018, Lalonde quit to run for the federal Liberals, violating the same kind of trust. This is the vacated provincial seat that Stephen Blais filled in the by-election. They obviously don't care about us in Orleans. They just care about themselves. What's frustrating is, though, that the people of Orleans couldn't for once see past their automatic vote for the Liberal Party to say, maybe this time, in a by-election, we'll send a message. What are they going to learn in Orleans? If you always vote Liberal, they're never going to give you anything. They will take you for granted. This is what they do. They use it to trade up and make their own lives better. Peter goes on to say, before 2019, Andrew Leslie was the MP, but he did not seek re-election because he was going to testify in the Mark Norman trial. Ted writes, re-rapid testing. What's wrong with Ontario? Nova Scotia and the Maritimes have full-blown rapid testing right now, seeking out the asymptomatic people. It is provincial differences like this that is creating confusion and distrust. Do I have time for one more here? No, sure. I don't have time for this.
All right.
No, I don't have time. I don't have time. No, we're out of time. Total. It's 8:57. Okay. All right, I have a minute.
If you must.
Dan says, Bill, with his own Leafs burn, we were all thinking it. Then he went on to say, the Bruins' goals are mailed in. This is comparing the U.S. election to a hockey game
That's
between
right.
the Montreal Canadiens and the Bruins, and they're arguing about who won even after the goals had been counted. Yeah, it was a great analogy. And I did mention, if this had been the Leafs, not the Montreal Canadiens, the Bruins' goals are mailed in, so they come late in the third period. Dan says, the scars must be deep, Bill. Burn. I'm going to need a second. Burn, Leafs, burn.
Oh.
The scars are deep, Dan. The scars are very deep indeed. You know, people have a dream about you're sitting in the office and you realize you're naked.
Or you're on stage giving a speech and all of a sudden,
laid bare to the world.
Sure.
I have a version of that dream. I dream that I'm in the room full of people. They're all looking at me and I've got my Leafs jersey on at home. The one I only wear at home. It's actually on in public. It's very humiliating. Rather be naked. 8:58, the morning rush. Seven. Let's just take a couple of minutes here. you really are in that camp that says, oh, we might get the vaccine weeks or months later than other countries, it's no big deal, what's the rush? Even some idiot commentators on the CBC saying, well, it's better if millions get it before us, we'll know if it works or not. You know, it has been tested.
Yeah.
That's what you don't give it to millions until you know. That's just absurd. Why anything at the CBC to spin it in a positive way, huh? Got to be kidding me. So in case you're in that camp, let's look at what's going on around the country right now. We are luckily, very luckily, in a little island right now. Here in Eastern Ontario and in the city of Ottawa, the capital district, the numbers have gone down in the past few weeks. They're at a manageable number. Hospitalizations, manageable. The death rate, low. It's not perfect. Sad that anyone has to die. But we're kind of missing where this is going in the rest of the world. And right now, in the rest of our country. Start with Alberta. They've reported more than 5,000 new COVID cases over the past 3 days.
Wow.
Dr. Dina Hinshaw, the province's chief medical officer of health, says hospitals were treating 453 patients for the illness, including 98 in the ICU beds. Those are totals that are new records for them. She says the province is also reporting another 8 deaths, bringing the total there now to 541.
Like all Albertans, I am alarmed by the rising case numbers reported today and over the weekend. This is another reminder that COVID-19 has a long incubation period, meaning the actions we take today will not be seen until 10 to 14 days from now.
Yeah, 10 to 14 days with this disease is a lifetime. Remember that when other people get their vaccine, 10 to 14 to 28 days to 50 days, we don't know, before us. And since we're being asked to hang on for this and sacrifice our businesses, our jobs, our life, you could give us some. I want the best guess you can give us right now. And I want to know what the federal government's agreement with these vaccine companies says about when we get them and how many we get. David Zeigon is medical director for the Edmonton Zone. He says Alberta's healthcare services is working more than double the number of ICU spaces just in the last few days.
There's no doubt that the hospital system is under significant strain. Having said that, we've planned extensively for it, and we are executing those plans as the demand increases.
You know, the Calgary hospitals have been told to ration oxygen, not for COVID patients, but to make sure there's enough oxygen for COVID patients. They're telling doctors to, look, give the minimum required for anyone who needs surgery. It could be post-surgery, it could be whatever chronic lung disease or whatever. Give them the minimum you can to preserve oxygen for COVID patients. That's where we are. But we don't care if the vaccine takes an extra couple of months because the Liberal government messed it up. We don't care about that. Maybe they didn't mess it up. Maybe they made a great deal. They're going to pop up. Surprise, look at the great deal. The vaccines arrived yesterday. Maybe. I think they'd be bragging about that.
Doubtful.
British Columbia health officials announced a total of 2,384 cases of COVID since Friday.
We are
277 historical cases in a data correction. Dr. Bonnie Henry out there says it's the collective efforts are going to see them through the surge in COVID cases this season.
We are facing a significant storm surge. And this is why right now we need to come together again. We know there is vaccine on the horizon, and that is our goal. That is what will help us get through the next phase.
You ever heard her sound more concerned? She sounds really, really scared, really worried. And what's the hope she's offering us? The vaccine on the horizon. Okay, but is that horizon March, or is it September, or is it, you know, right? When is it? Do you think Bonnie Henry would like to know the answer to that? Oh, you bet she would. She offered her condolences to the families while urging British Columbians to hold strong and stay apart.
The oldest person who died from COVID this weekend was 103. And you think what that person has gone through.
Manitoba's talk doctor is warning the province's tight restrictions have to remain in place. 11 more deaths there. It's not a big province. 343 more cases. Dr. Brent Rusin, The chief provincial health officer says he understands it's difficult, but the current rate of infection is just unsustainable.
We continue to announce many deaths every day. Today again into the double digits. I think we all know we can't continue along these lines.
So you know what that means? The tight restrictions have to stay in place.
The consequence of lifting these restrictions right now is a much longer page of Manitobans that we lost to this virus. Overwhelming of our healthcare system.
Let's leave the country for a minute. Have you been watching what's happening in California?
Yeah, it's not good there right now.
They could see a tripling of hospitalizations by Christmas. That's their current estimate.
Wow.
Their governor, Gavin Newsom, says he's trying to head off concerns that severe cases could overwhelm their intensive care beds.
So that rate of growth on the cases as well as positivity rate is of concern. Here's why. Roughly 12% of our new cases likely will be hospitalizations.
That's a big number because their new case number is very high. So again, you know, put it in perspective. When Canadians tell a pollster, yeah, if it takes a little while longer to get here, no big deal. Remember, the question said January or February. That looks like a very optimistic spin on it. But let's say it's February. How many more cases is that? How many more deaths? Newsom in California says intensive care cases have increased 67% in just the last 2 weeks there.
You can see in mid-December, California, the ICU beds will be at 112% capacity.
2 weeks is an eternity
for
this virus. 2 weeks is an eternity to wait for vaccines to start, let alone 2 months or maybe more. More like, hey, we're just at the beginning of December. We could be talking 4 months away. Meanwhile, they're making appointments for the next week in the UK. That's not a small difference. Why would we be patient about that? Why would we not demand answers? If that's how it is and we're stuck with it, then I guess we'll have to live with it and we'll have to plan accordingly and prepare. But we have a right to know. That's my only concern now is why can't they give us more information? A former Alberta chief medical officer of health says public health orders, because people are starting to rebel against them, have to balance science with society in order to be effective. Andre Corriveau, who held the office from 2009 to 2012, says health orders only work if we support them, the public. That calculation is a political decision not made by doctors, but by politicians.
You can't pass measures that a majority of the public is not supportive of because it's not enforceable. And, you know, it's the political level who has the responsibility to judge the acceptability of certain things that might be viewed as desirable.
Glad to hear a scientist say that, because remember the criticism the premier was under last week because of an audit that showed, well, he's not letting the health officials make all the decisions. They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
They should be giving their best advice. But it's the elected leaders that are ultimately responsible, and they have to weigh the best medical advice with all of the other parts of society that have to function. Gorva says, you don't want to damage the trust that politicians and public health officers need in each other to be able to make good decisions.
Our effectiveness is built upon trust. If you turn around and you go, you start doing public advocacy and then you've lost the trust and then you're not effective anymore.
I know I keep coming back to my agenda here, but if the Liberal government won't be honest with us about the deals they cut with these vaccine companies, good or bad, they lose the trust. You lose the trust. People will stop listening to you when you say, stay at home, wear your mask, keep your distance, don't have family for Christmas. You lose the room. If they haven't already, they're going to do that further, making us guess about where we are in the lineup. Don't send Moderna's CEO and chief health officer out there to say, well, you're not at the back of the line. So far, the media has been dutiful. Well, they said we're not at the back of the line, so we reported as, hey, we're near the front of the line. That's not what he said. He said we're not at the back. There are a lot of countries in the world. We could still be way, way back of first, second, third, fourth, or fifth place.
175th.
Why the secrecy? What are you hiding? 9:17, it's about now. We are at this time of year. This would be, what, my fifth coming up?
Yeah.
We'd be getting ready for our annual breakfast broadcast out of the studio to help raise money for great causes. Remember the 1 year? Oh, you weren't there. You were so, so happy that year.
Yeah, working.
Dave usually complains, why don't I get to go on remote? We were in that barn at Lansdowne.
That's right.
What's that building called?
The
Pavilion. Aberdeen Pavilion.
Aberdeen Pavilion, thank you.
We were freezing to death in the Aberdeen Pavilion because of a last-minute issue with the normal venue. Whew. Well, what are they going to do this year? We're going to talk about that coming up next, The Morning Rush.
Now back to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
9:58. You know what time that is? It means it's Leslie Roberts time.
Good morning.
And he has arrived. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Well, you got me fired up at 6:20 on TV, and I never really calmed down afterwards.
You're always fired up, though, at 6:20 a.m. What do you mean today? How was that?
Lately, I've been feeling pretty laid back on your show.
Yeah. Well.
But I felt like today I really, you got under my skin on purpose. You pushed, because I'd sent you a text last night, and you knew what was on my mind.
Well, the bottom line here is, as we continue to talk about, you know, that race for the vaccines, you got the, well, the politicians trying to take whatever they can and they spin than they can, right? And so when, you know, good on the premier, man of action, picking up the phone, speaking to the executives, problem is he didn't get an answer on a date either for Canada. So
I just can't believe there are so many Canadians. Now, what that real number is, I don't know. I went to the Léger poll website, and it's pretty clear in their preamble to the question. You know, we're looking at the U.S. getting a vaccine maybe mid to late December. And if you had to wait till January or February, would you be upset? And my answer, even my answer would be, no, it's being manufactured there. We know they're going to get it first. That'd be great, January.
Yeah.
But that's not what people like Moderna are telling us. They're saying likely by the end of the first quarter. So that's more like March or April than it is January or February. So I think those numbers are a little optimistic. But anyway, why don't we all want the vaccine as quickly as possible? Why wouldn't we be upset if this government cut deals that didn't guarantee us? We spent the money without even knowing where we were in line, what the rationale is, what the priority order is. One vaccine expert I heard from this morning said, you absolutely would do that. Has to be part of the deal. And if not, that's why they're probably not telling us.
Yeah.
Right? You can't know when you buy a vaccine before it's even approved, let alone in some cases even invented. We understand you can't get an exact date, but you could get an outline that says the first 50% of the vaccines we will be using in our own country. Then, because Australia bought it second, I don't know that that's true, but let's say it's Australia bought whatever vaccine second, they'll get the next 20%. And then the United Kingdom will get the next 20%, and Canada will get the last 10%. That's the deal we bought. Tell us that. We have a right to know, because lives are being lost every day, almost two an hour right now, almost two people an hour. So six, maybe eight people since we last talked about this morning have died. They're asking us to hold tight to dig in.
Yeah.
We have a right to know approximately how long and how deep we have to dig in. And for Canadians to not demand that, you get the government you deserve. This is literally life or death. That's not even to talk about the lost businesses, the lost jobs, the lost income. We're just talking about the lives lost. All of those things matter, and every day matters. And we can't expect that Canada will be first in line for a vaccine made somewhere else. But we deserve better answers as to what the deal is. We cut. It's our government. They work for us. We need to know what it is.
Absolutely.
And we need an approximate, at least, where are we in line? It's not enough that some friend of Justin Trudeau who runs Moderna says, you're not at the end of the line. Okay, well, are we in the top three?
Yeah.
Top four?
Yeah.
Top 10?
Where's the follow-up? He's been on all networks. I've never heard the follow-up question. So where are we? give us what we're not hearing from our government. Look, even Amazon, you order on Amazon, and what happens? You get a target date for when the delivery happens, right?
And if things fall through. We're not necessarily going to hold you to it, but
give us an idea that
we're
not waiting
a
year.
Hold on through a long, tough winter.
Yeah.
We need to know how bright that light is and when we're likely to see it at the end of the tunnel.
We're seeing the political fallout, if you like, because there's a new poll out in terms of how the premier's popularity or slash approval rate is going. And, well, basically the bottom line here is where the numbers are, with the exception of Quebec, where they're good, that's where the premiers are doing quite well. And when they're not doing so well, the numbers are starting to fall. So for some reason, Quebecers, even though they have the most cases and so on, although that's pretty close now because of Ontario's records we've been setting, apparently François Legault can do no wrong. He is still way up there for his approval rating. I'll give you the numbers because they were, I mean,
different impressive. Expectation, though. Quebecers are more likely to not want to wear masks, to want businesses to stay open, right? They're,
yeah.
They're less demanding. And in Ontario, conservatives are starting to turn against the premier a bit because they want businesses to be open.
Right. I've seen that. The tug of war, as you call it so well, in terms of what he has to do to balance and hope long term that the choice he makes or the road, the lane that he picks will actually serve not only businesses but also society well. So in Quebec, he was at 77% approval. He's down to 64. That's really good, though. Even though those record numbers, they're still doing great. Here in Ontario, we're seeing a slip for Doug Ford. He peaked at 69. So Legault was well ahead of him even there. I mean, ahead of everyone, but number two was Doug Ford in terms of approval rate at the peak. He went from 69, Bill, down to 55.
Well, he would have taken that all day long a year ago.
And most politicians would, right?
Right.
Yeah, 51. You got to feel, though, for Jason Kenney's at 40. The big loss is the progressive conservative premier in Manitoba, Brian Pallister. He's down 32% approval rate, which is, you know, in most years, after 3 years in office, is pretty normal.
But you know what happened there? The West Coast felt like their leaders had done a great job because they didn't really have the first wave.
Yeah.
When in fact, we know now what happened is the major cities where the most travel happens, they got it first. By the time it started to make its way out west, the weather had improved. People were moving outdoors. It's a seasonal virus. They just kind of got lucky. We all thought Bonnie Henry was a genius.
Yeah.
Now look what's happening in British Columbia. Things are worse there than in Ontario because they actually thought there was nothing to this thing. They thought they had it figured out.
Yeah.
Now they're learning the hard way they didn't.
Yeah, and I think it's, we even took a hit over the summer. We let our guard down. I think they did it, times whatever. And yeah. As a result, they're
paying. Well, their guard was never up, I think, is part of the problem.
Absolutely. Hey, we're getting, there's another poll I want to talk to you about, but it's an interesting dynamic. It's in terms of how the federal parties are doing, but what's interesting is they break it down in terms of gender support here. So we know the Liberals are leading because of, well, I guess mostly their approval so far, although this poll was prior to the whole vaccine date mix-up. That being said, the Liberals have done quite well, as Ford has done here in Ontario. 39% for the Liberals, 32% for the Conservatives. Liberals' lead grows to 7 points now nationally. But here's where it gets interesting, and that's going to change. But here's where it gets interesting, and it'll give you insight into what the parties have to do to resonate more with Canadians. There's a huge gender split. Female voters top the Liberals by 12%, and it's thanks to them that they could form another majority government if an election were held today.
Which is not impossible, that we could have an election very soon.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Jagmeet Singh will bring down this government.
No.
But for sure, I mean, that's always been a strength for the Liberals, the female vote. And the Conservatives have some work to do there. But, I feel like I don't even know Aaron O'Toole yet. I don't know much about the guy. And I think that's true of most Canadians.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised, given the popularity of the premiers, that our federal leaders are not doing better because of the pandemic.
And everyone's
benefited almost everybody who's in power.
Yeah, absolutely.
And More than that.
To your point about Aaron O'Toole, he's getting kudos from everybody. Tom Mulcair saying he's doing everything right. It's just he's got to do it and grow the pacing to catch on like a fire.
I bet most people couldn't even tell you who the Liberal leader in Ontario is right now because
yeah, exactly.
The leaders are sucking up all the oxygen, right? Because they're doing daily press conferences.
Point taken.
Yeah.
To your point, Conservatives, males up by 16% over females. So you can see there's a huge gender split. When you take the 12 for the Liberals, 16 for the Conservatives, that's a wide gap. That's a
also
wide gap.
Also explains why people don't talk about politics at home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the polarization begins at home. Hey, you talked about Jagmeet Singh and some of the things that he wants to prop up the government because ultimately he didn't like much of what he saw yesterday. I spoke to him on CTV Morning Live. And I know you had a thing about the Netflix tax. So while we get to now pay GST and HST on Netflix for the first time, that was part of the economic update, the corporation Netflix does not have to pay any corporation tax despite the fact that Singh said this was a great opportunity.
So just to be clear, what they're doing is not actually a tax on any of the revenue, not anything like corporate tax. They're just putting in place a GST, which is a consumer tax.
Right.
It's not that Netflix or Facebook or Google don't have to pay anything additional. They're putting on a tax so that the consumer has to pay.
What do you think, Bill? Should they be taxing Netflix?
You got to love that, how people in the NDP think, don't you? But they're so narrow vision, right? Why wouldn't you tax the big corporations instead of the little guy? Okay, so let's do that, Jugmeet. You're a freaking genius, buddy. So let's do that. Let's charge Netflix more to operate in Canada through taxation. How do you think they're going to recoup that money? You think they're going to have a board meeting and say, let's take less money for our shareholders and for ourselves. Let's take the loss. No, they're going to raise the Netflix fee in Canada. The price will go up anyway. So what are you doing? In fact, the corporate tax is probably far easier to avoid through clever accounting than a GST would be. So, or an HST. What is he talking about? But by the way, I'm a broadcaster and I want these, because these are just broadcasters. Outside broadcasters are coming in and taking food off my table and your table.
Yeah.
So, of course, I have a vested interest. I want to see a level playing field. But even I wouldn't do it now. What's the point of taxing Netflix so that you can take that money right now and give it back to the same family who's not working? This is all we have right now. You want us to stay home? The government would be better paying for our Netflix subscription for the next 6 months to keep us home than to tax us on it. Come on. What are we doing here?
And they'd probably pull Schitt's Creek off their rundown, and then there would be Emmys for Canadian shows and the Canadian content, because, I mean, you're right, 100% on the whole expectations. But
this is why the NDP will never govern. I mean, these ridiculous childlike ideas they come up with. Corporate tax, that way consumers won't have to pay. Yeah, that's how the world works, Jugmeet.
And yet he's going to prop up the government. He says he's going to try and negotiate.
Oh, of course
something,
he is, because he has no money, because he had to borrow money for the last election.
I think they're threatened too, right? I think they're going to get the kind of seat numbers they have now. Unfortunate for, I guess, holding government accountable. And that's what bottom line is we got to do right now.
Strong opposition is always good for
us. Yeah. Always good for us. All right, Bill. Have a great day.
Waiting for those numbers.
Yeah, as soon as we have the numbers, we'll have them for you here when it comes to the COVID numbers. Thank you, Bill. All right, speaking of, the race for the vaccine continues.